Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome to another episode of Rue's Kitchen. I'm your host, Jason Madison, and as always, joined by my co-hosts, Bethany Anderson and Anthony Mays.
Good enunciation, man. Good enunciation there.
Yeah. Thanks for being clear this time. We're not your co-hosts.
Just got to make sure that everybody knows that. It's a mistake. You know,
I mean, we could be co-hosts.
Right. It was a Freudian slip, if you will. And we're talking about episode 7, The Theater and Its Double. Rexy's back. You know what I'm saying? Lexi did her thing on the play. This is all about the play.
Who did you say was back?
Rexy. You saying Rue and Lexi are back?
Yeah, Rexy's back.
Come Rexy. On. Okay. Yeah, I had Rexy to make sure. Back.
I thought you were saying Rexy because she wrecked shit, but
no. Rexy's back. Like, okay. This was Rue and Lexi's episode, and that was really the overarching arc for me. There was a lot of other drama and things at play, but the thing that pulled on my heartstring was seeing them be young girls and go through everything. And that was a Stand By Me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They did it.
Okay. I could see that. Yeah. So I thought it was really interesting that we opened with the overture. Like, mm-hmm. It's like 30 to 45 seconds of just, you know, the screen. And then we go into Lexi at Rue's house for Rue's dad's funeral or memorial, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting how she's just like taking everything in like she always does. But like even in that moment, she's very observant and just listening to everyone's conversations. And, you know, we get a peek at Leslie, who is being questioned, you know, by this random lady in the house asking about life insurance and all this stuff. It's like, girl, like, read the room, honey. Like,
right.
Please. And then, you know, she kind of runs away from her over to, was it Susie?
Suze. I think it's just a...
Sue.
Suze.
Suze.
Yeah.
No E on it.
And so Lexi walks down the hallway to go find Rue. And I caught this after rewatching, because I'm like, who are these random, like, girls in the hallway? But we have the double of Cassie, Maddie, and Kat in the hallway kind of gossiping. So we got Cassie, who is Holly. We got Maddie, who is Marta, and Kat, who is Luna. But I was really confused, but then it all, you know, came together and made sense once we saw her play kind of open.
Yeah, that was, I was not sure if that was supposed to be Kat. I was like looking like, is that... I was like, was Maddie fat when they were younger? I don't know. It just looked like, I was just trying to make sure that was the way she was doing it at first. You know, watching it, I'm like, okay, like, are these three other random girls and she's just showing them, or she's really showing how I've always had the strongest relationship with Rue? They're all in the hallway, these same girls. This is the story of the five of us, our life, right? That's the name of the play, Our Life. We got the...
Not Oklahoma, by the way.
It's not Oklahoma.
It's not even a loose adaptation. She ripped up Oklahoma, tossed it. It's gone.
Yeah.
It's out of life.
Yeah. And then we got the another memeable line from Maddie. Is this play about us?
No shit, Maddie. No shit. So yeah. I really like how, you know, we start the play. We go back to real life. Go back in time to, you know, Rue and Lexi having their conversation, and she walks in and Rue is just doing a line off of a book or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's like, damn, girl. So she's been like, we get a chance to see like, oh, she's really been like into it before her dad passed and immediately after. She's just going for it. And so she reads to Rue, and then we transition into the play. And I like how they introduced every character with like a picture day. That was just so dope. Like, I thought that was a brilliant way to like, this, like, we get to see them and we get their names. And, you know, as the audience watching, which I was confused, like, why would Maddie be like, is this about, yeah, girl, like, you see your doppelganger right there.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Wait. Maze.
No, please. By all means, both of you take your time. Please praise this. I'm giving you as much runway and space as you can. I'm holding all my stuff back. Keep talking about how confusing it was. Yeah. Go on, B.
I think that's part of the charm of the episode, is that it's a play, but it's also showing you the real behind the scenes of what went on in these events. And it's giving you, it's unreliable narrator, because you don't know whose perspective or what is really what. But it's also dope to see basically the talent that they are showing that Lexi has. You know, she's kind of been a backside character. She doesn't have the drama of her sister. You know, she's not wilding like Rue or, you know, Jules or Elliot and any of these other people. And so now she kind of is coming to the fore, and it's dope to see that transformation like happen before our eyes. And they're showing like, this is the talent this person is equipped with. Same with Ethan. You know, I'm team Ethan, and he really got to shine, you know,
even
early on in that that moment when he was the photographer for class day. Like, he plays so many characters in this play. So like,
you know, including Suze.
A star is born. He came Suze, in as Suze. Yeah, that's right. He came out.
That's me on stage. He's playing me. Yeah.
She was so elated just to see herself included and how it's like spot on it was. Like, she comes in with a wine glass, like the way she's dressed and everything. It was just perfect. Ethan Ethan was the star of the show. And like Kat, you know, some episodes ago, was like, oh, you got the part? Yes, bitch, he got every part.
All the parts. Like, yes.
I don't want to take anything away from Ethan. Phenomenal. Loved it. Loved his enthusiasm. Loved all the roles he was playing. I also don't want to take anything away from Lexi getting on her Max Fisher bullshit behind the scenes, chewing right. out the lighting operator, saying she'll replace him with a blind monkey. All of it. It's fantastic.
It's I'm all in on the
blind yeah. 3-year old. Yeah. I'm with it. Also, the fact that Ethan is the star of the play, he's a hot, straight theater kid.
Yeah.
He'd be hooking up with every girl in the show. All right. Yeah. Like, he wouldn't be locked down with Kat, who doesn't care about him. If you're a straight man in the theater world, it is like crack cocaine right. being released into the neighborhood. Like, especially when we get to the dancers, which I can't wait to talk about later, like, none of those dudes were straight. So, right. you know that Ethan had the pick of the litter.
Yeah.
Kat, you're fucking up. Also, she's like, laughing and smiling, and it's what you dumped his ass. You dumped yeah, his like, ass last episode.
Watching him shine right now has got to be hurting her soul. Like, you know, I can't imagine what she's going through, but she's playing it off so cool. Like, yeah, I just broke up with this guy who's obviously a star in the making. Like, and he's putting on the best performance that any of us have ever seen, putting my cam girl vids to shame. But yeah, he put his whole ethos into that play.
Yo, so I like how we're going like back and forth. Like, you know, of course we got Maddie, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. But then we get to go and have a flashback to Fexy. So Lexi's trying to sit here and explain. She does a terrible job at it, but she's trying to explain what the play is about. And he's confused as fuck. But she also kind of sounds confused, too. But she's, you know, more concerned about if she's going to hurt people's feelings. But I feel like she kind of wants to, in a way. But she wants to be seen as like the good girl. Like, oh, I didn't mean to hurt feelings. This is just, you know, our life and my perspective of what's going on. But the way that she portrayed her sister was like spot on.
Yeah.
Spot on.
Oh yeah. It was a read. If you would.
It was a read. It was a read.
Yeah.
But so. You know, like even just, you know, going into this whole like this talk about puberty and boobs and your body's changing, how they had her, you know, descend from the ceiling and the hoop and, you know, she's dressed like an angel. And, you know, this is how she sees how everyone views her sisters as like this perfect girl. Mm-hmm. And she's just kind of overlooked because she doesn't have the appearance that her sister has, who's like, what, like a year and some change older than her?
Yeah.
433 days, to be
fair. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. And I like the part where she's just like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe, you know, they're still growing. And you know, her sister's like, no, they're not. No. You're done. You're not getting no titties, girl. That's it. That's it for you.
It's a wrap for you.
That I can relate. I can relate. Like, still waiting on
those to show up.
You know what? I had them after I had my son, and I was like, "Oh shit!" And then they were like, "Peace out, I'm out of here." So it was fun while they lasted. But I mean, I remember that, like being in high school and seeing everybody just like get these boobs. Like my best friend, huge boobs. She ended up having to get like a breast reduction later because her boobs were so big. So I'm seeing all these girls walk around with cleavage and they're like trying to cover up. And, you know, like in real high school, there's a dress code. You can't just be out showing them off.
Yeah, no,
not a euphoria.
The short skirts, the cleavage, it's all for everybody's viewing publicly in this high school.
I wore an off the shoulder sweater.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was covered.
Yeah.
But my shoulders were exposed. My shoulder blades were exposed. And I got sent to the office like, hey, you got to put a coat on or you have to change clothes. And I'm like, are you serious?
I'll be showing them shoulders in here, girl.
Yeah.
But it's funny that you're talking about that because I was thinking about the Pam and Tommy thing that's on now and like how big boobs were in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, boobs are way less of a thing now. I feel like, I mean, obviously they will always be a thing. It's part of just the nature of,
well, yeah,
young people. But
Pam Anderson archetype of top heavy, skinny white girls with no ass is out. It's all about booty now. This is the booty generation.
Yeah, we're That's in a right. booty generation. We have changed fundamentally as people. So that whole, you know,
I think we can thank J-Lo for that. I think that's probably her doing.
She started the transition.
Kim Kardashian took it over the top, but it was J-Lo's wave that we're on.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went from J-Lo and then we went to like Beyonce and her like bootylicious era. Mm-hmm. And then she just took that and ran with it. And then of course we get the Kim K and then with all the surgery innovations. Yep.
Mm. We got to technology. Give credit to Nicki Minaj as well, because she had a pioneer body. Type.
Yeah.
And that was, everybody wanted to look like her for a while, you know, for a long while. Still, that's kind of what the BBL thing is all about.
Social media for sure. They said, you know, with all the studies being done that, you know, with selfies, you know, becoming super popular, mm-hmm. people didn't like the way that they looked in photos, that they mm-hmm. started to change, you know, surgically and permanently so that they didn't have to do so much like altering. And then, of course, we get the filters and everything else. So people want to look like their photos in real life. And we just have this huge phenomenon. But, Lexi wanted some titties.
Yeah. And so did she wear like a push-up bra when she did that dress scene? All right. She does a dress scene next.
Yeah.
And she's like strutting her stuff in front of.
Yeah. Speaking of technology, man.
Yeah.
No, shout out to the set designers, because if I were to put on a play, I would have not even thought of like how to do anything like that. And the budget, like, girl, yeah, like what's students, going on?
You know, those students, they're so entrepreneurial. They've got their whole lives ahead of them. They're visionary talents. You know, Lexi gets a lot of credit for being a genius for writing this play, but a play is a product of lots of people. It's not just Lex. She's not building the sets herself. I just want to make
it's a collective effort for sure.
The stage manager definitely deserves a hand for what she was doing. We don't know her name, but the young sister that was Lexi's right hand, she's dope. She was calling the shots.
She's dope.
Yeah. So I'll give you guys the Broadway worthy production budget and set design. All right. You can have that. All right. Yeah. I'll even give you the doppelgangers for everyone in the cast. Yeah. There's people that look exactly like them that go to their school and we've never talked about it before. Sure. Totally. I'm buying it. I'll even give you the ripped gay dancers with perfect choreography.
Right.
That are grown ass men. I'll give you those. They've got 20 dudes at Euphoria High who can break it down like no other. Sure, totally. I'm in. I'm buying it.
But hey, no, really, it hit me with the Marta thing, though. When I saw her and I was like, if she's a real person, how could she not be thinking, like, I go to the school with a girl that I look just like and now I'm playing her in this play?
Like, we needed a little more character development on that. Like, these girls have been waiting for their moment to shine, to take over the spotlight, and here it is.
Yeah.
See, when everyone else ages out, we can just go to them.
But where they lost me, guys, was with what Sam Levinson himself described in the featurette after the episode of, sometimes it's the play and sometimes it's a memory and sometimes it's in somebody's head and you're not sure whose head it's in. And even I don't know whose head it's in. Come on. It was incoherent. We don't know what the fuck is happening. All of a sudden, Cassie and Nate are fucking on stage, but it's not the Cassie and Nate in the play. It's the real Cassie and Nate. So did they really do that? Or is that just her being worried about fucking on stage? What's going on? It's too much. They should have done everything with the doppelgangers and they should have done it on stage. If you want to have the memories, you got to do it a different way. And the editing on the show is already chaotic. Like in a normal episode, it's chaotic. This was turned up to 11. It was taking it to the next level with this stuff. It was bananas.
Yeah, they went to the final frontier with that.
Was beautifully done. I'm sorry. Like, I love the, okay, so the scene when Lexi's trying, you know, looking at her boobs or whatever, we have Cassie, oh, you know, no big deal. If I could switch bodies with you, I would in a second. And they pan over and then we get her double. And I just thought, like, holy shit, that's really dope. Because I feel like with everything that we're getting in the play and how we get Lexi's point of view. We're getting her perspective in a backstory way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, especially when they, you know, talk about Lexi and Cassie's dad. Mm-hmm. In season one, we got it all from Cassie's point of view. You know, they went to get ice cream and everything was all great, but we didn't get to see what Lexi was experiencing. And I love how they played off of that. You know, and I love how they like aged them down because, you know, they didn't have on makeup and they had their hair in pigtails and braces. And
big braces, you know, baby. Yep.
Dress crazy or whatever. Braces
will age you down every time.
Yeah, every time. But I loved how, you know, we got to see that Lexi was just going through it with her dad. She picked up immediately like, yo, dad is not okay. And we probably need someone to come pick us up because he's a mess right now.
Shout out to those Euphoria dads, man. They're not representing for us.
Yeah. I hope that McKay's dad did well.
Oh, you mean McKay, the dude that hasn't showed up since he was at the New Year's party and Nate mushed his face? That guy?
Yeah, that
well,
was.
Let's hope he is at college making friends. He has a new girlfriend.
Let's hope he made the team and he's getting reps on the field. Yeah,
please.
Fingers crossed for McKay.
I wish the best for that young man.
Oh my gosh, it was kind of like a dope way to see how Cassie. Even seeing her dad fucked up, she just wanted his love and to be around him. And that just says a lot about who her character is and what she wants. And they are totally different in that sense. So I really enjoyed how they kind of weave this in and out.
Yeah, I liked that scene a lot. Yeah.
But I think I like generally the style, and I get what he's, you know, the kind of the dilemma he's up against is that he wants to create this highly stylized show. He wants to give backstory. You know, he wants to do all these cool tricks. And he wants it to all make sense, but it doesn't. And I get what your frustration, man, is, but it's like, I just kind of enjoy it now because I'm so sick of being frustrated with it. But it's just like, I'm watching it and I'm like, okay, is the memorial actually in the play? Do they have any scenes of the memorial in the play? Because they showed it twice. And I'm like, well, it leads to something that's in the play and the people reacted to it. So how was that shown in the play? Like, and so I'm like, you know, there's a bunch of things that happens with. I mean, there's the whole, you know, again, the show always has an elephant in the room scene. And it's like the Cal Nate thing. Like, what the fuck was that?
Yo!
Just throw that in the middle of the play. Like, all right.
Whose imagination was that?
Yeah, like, please.
Jules? Like, what are we talking about?
I was creeped out. This really turned into like a really psycho thriller for a moment. Like, we had so many scenes where I'm like, this would be like a great scary movie when we have, you know, Cassie, she reacts, she, you know, gets out, she goes to the bathroom and she's in the mirror, like smiling and crying at the same time. I'm like, this girl is psycho. Yeah. She goes back and she's breathing on the door. And it's just like, I've seen this in Jurassic Park, but you know.
Wait, so that that scene was Nate's bad dream, right?
It was Nate's bad dream, yeah.
And there was some Cassie Jewel mix-ups like in the mirror. And then he's looking at the back of his own head.
Right?
Start with Maddie. It's a Maddie putting on a dress that's looking back, right? Isn't she looking back at him, right? And then it goes from her to him ripping off the whatever fishnets.
The fishnets,
Who we think is Cassie. And then her head in the bed. And then,
And then at some point, Cal comes in.
Yeah, because there's Jewel is in the mirror, right? Yeah. So yeah, he's putting all of his
everybody all up in one giant goulash.
So
sex nightmare.
That was
baby, you got a stew going.
And so throwing that in the midst of everything again, like I don't, maybe that's just foreshadowing the scene that they're having with the guys and lifting weights and how he's going to react to it, but.
I mean, it kind of just shows that Nate is just, he's fucked up by his dad. His dad is, his dad fucked him. Literally. He has really been messed up.
I guess that's the question that everybody then asked after that, right? Is like, Was he sexually abused by Cal? That's kind of the...
Emotionally, mentally, I feel like absolutely. Yeah. Like that could be a form of sexual abuse in a way by him watching his dad fucking on video for for 10 years.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
And that can really take a toll on you. So he's, you know, confused about his feelings about, you know, with his dad, with Jewel, with Cassie, with everyone. He's really just so messed up and he just can't figure out what's really going on in his head. And, you know, he's waking up in a cold sweat. And then we got, you know, Cassie beside him trying to comfort him like, oh, it's just a dream. It's like, girl.
Right. But what was that scene with them having sex? That's not in the play, right?
No, it was just very highly stylized.
But there's a shot of it where the crowd is in the background.
Yep. Yeah, so. There was. I think that was probably, I mean, then we just get into this weird interpretation. Like that's Cassie feeling like her whole life is being put up on display, right?
Right.
Like, I like that.
And my boyfriend are now being aired out in front of everybody. Right. We need to talk about Fez. Fez, the only person who didn't make it to the play in the whole goddamn town, apparently. It's the open seat right there. Lexi, a little too preoccupied to be hurt by this, but she's got too much going on. But he didn't make it. Obviously, we have the whole tension at the house. We've got the random drug dealer Faye's boyfriend coming over. He's up to no good. Ashtray's got a... Is it a knife? He's got a knife up his sleeve.
Yeah, some kind of switchblade.
Something's about to go down there. And we know that he doesn't make it. So they leave that cliffhanger for us. But worried about my guy Fez. Don't do anything to Fez. Do not bench Fez.
Yeah.
Like, I will riot. I will stop watching this show. But I did think it was interesting to see the flashback with Fez, Rue, and Lexi hanging out and Lexi smoking weed for the first time. Because when they have that conversation at New Year's, it seems like they've never talked before.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. It really does make it seem like, oh, you know, you're the coolest person here in a way. Yeah. Like we've never had a chance to get to know each other.
We've never talked before.
And it's like, you guys drew a mustache on her, a whole beard on her face and laughed about it. And so and
they did a nice little Inception with the Bob Ross joke there.
That was good.
Planting the seed. I like that.
Full circle with that. I like that.
Yeah.
But you know, and even with you saying that, like, you know, they went to the store, Lexi and Rue, and, you know, she sees that Rue is buying drugs from him and they hang out at the store and shit. So it's just like.
Back when Rue just smoked weed.
Yeah, it was just weed.
It's just copping a little eighth.
Simple days, you know. Yeah,
just spark up that blunt real quick.
But yeah, they clearly are well aware of each other. So it's weird. It just makes the New Year's scene and everything that's happened this season a little weirder because it seems like they would have had more context for this. I get that they're, you know, discovering potential romantic feelings for each other, but that just stuck out.
Yeah. I was going to ask, and this, I don't know if this is a dumb question because I haven't been paying attention or if it's a smart question and everybody's asking it, but how did Rue's dad die?
Yeah, cancer.
Cancer. Okay. And then...
And the first line that she's doing, I believe, is his medication.
Yeah, she said it was her
dad. Okay. So that's what I was going to say. Like, she had his pills, and that's what was so interesting, that she did a line of something else for his cancer. So what could that have been?
She crushed it up, probably, and decided to sniff it. That was my guess.
What kind of drug could that have been that it would have...
No idea.
You know what, Jason? Take a little walk down to your local pharmacy and...
Yeah.
Ask them which cancer drugs are the best to get high on. They'll help you out.
Okay. That was just an interesting thing to me because it was like, it seemed like they were trying to make a connection with her, you know, doing that with him. And I was just like, but if he didn't die of drugs, then like.
Yeah. So even in season one, she started to take his pills and she even said like she would lay beside him and they would watch TV together. That. She was like, he was so high that he didn't know or didn't notice that she was also high as well. So she was taking his medicine before he even passed away.
Right. Which brings me to, I think, my favorite scene. It's funny because I love the play, but my favorite scene was the scene with Leslie and Rue in the bed. Mm-hmm. And she's eating her butter pecan ice cream. like a true mom, like a true black mom.
A black mom, yes.
And she was just being real with her. And my favorite line was, she said, "That's exciting to you, being a crackhead." Like, you know, they came down off of the high of their argument and the feel good of the dinner. And now, like, she's been going through her withdrawal. And she's like, basically, like, "I'm going to have a real ass conversation with you right now."
It's like, basically, I'm kind of washing my hands. Like, girl, you're going to do what you want to do anyway. You're fighting me. You're, you know, going crazy all over my house and just losing your shit. And it's exhausting. And you could tell the conversation that Leslie and Ali had really, you know, she was thinking about that. Like, yeah, I need to focus on Gia. Because right now,
she took his advice.
Right. You know, right.
Like a good girlfriend. No, I'm joking.
I would love to see that be like
wishful thinking.
To see that be at the end of the season finale. It's just like Leslie and Ali having dinner at the house. We gotta have
Also, Jay, we got the follow up to the scene that you wanted to see last week.
Yes,
we got Maddie chasing Cassie into the bathroom. And I did see a great thing online of how it's the exact same situation, separated by a bathroom door, as it was at the New Year's party with Maddie on the outside and Cassie on the inside.
Yeah. And Maddie, you know, gives that heartbreaking line right there where she says, "He put me through hell and now he's fucking my best friend."
Like, also, dang, it's not about him. This is about us.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she told her that. Like,
it's like, fuck him. How do you ruin our friendship like this? And you know the bullshit he put me through, and you still decide to fuck with him for an extended, like, for a while. And I love how they decided, like, we're going to debut our relationship at school. We're going to walk down the hallway, and, you know, and Maddie's just like, well, at least she looks the part.
Looking like me, bitch.
Yep. Yeah, it's like, because she knows this guy. She knows how he likes to control, you know, the women that he's into. It's like, he likes a certain type of woman, you know, to be dressed and to be soft and to look super feminine, to be hairless, and, you know, how they described him in his fantasy in season one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess we got another scene too with your girl, Maddie and Minka Kelly.
What the hell was this scene? This was one of the dumbest scenes of the whole episode.
I watched this scene three times.
What?
Like, I watched it more than anything because I was trying to understand what was going on. And so I guess what's happening is that Maddie's supposed to be leaving the town.
Yeah, that's what the message was I got. And she was talking about saying goodbye to the kid that she was babysitting.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, because at first I thought she was talking to him about Nate. And I'm like, that doesn't make no sense. And then that's why I had to watch it back again and again. And I'm like, oh, okay. Because then even at the end, she gives her the gift, the dress. And on the card, it says, "Don't look back." So I'm like, okay, so she's thinking about leaving. I don't know if she's the senior out of the group. Who the fuck knows? So, like, that's why it doesn't make any sense.
So Lexi and Rue are a year younger. So it's Maddie and Cassie and possibly Kat. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I think Kat may be in the I think Kat is in the same class as Jules and Rue, because Kat and Jules met in summer school.
Okay.
Who knows? I think she's leaving. Perfect answer to that. She says she's leaving. We gotta believe her. Let's talk about Kat for a second.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Kat for a second. Who Lexi introduces as Maddie's best friend.
Yep.
This BB erasure will not stand. What?
Hey,
they just fucking met. They aren't best friends.
Hey, man. So
a lot of times in TV shows, bro, you know, the second season, after a show really realizes it's hot, they start to rewrite what they did in season one. It happens a lot, honestly.
Oh, boy.
You know? And so that's why I can't even be that mad, because I just know that that's, you know, what we're going through right now. And now this is going to be the canon of the show. What happened in season two, everything before it will kind of matter.
And then Kat mask, sexy dancing.
Yeah.
Was that doppelganger Kat? Was that in the play? Does
that
Lexi
was a big
know
question.
About the webcam shit? Does anybody know about it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was Kat getting back in her bag and they just wanted to show that. Like, basically, because it wasn't her doppelganger. It was for sure Bari. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, okay, what Are they just showing some sort of juxtaposition? Whose mind is this in? Forget it. It's just Kat getting back in her bag. That's all you need to know.
That's like, all it was. That's it. That's it.
Yeah. You go, and when you're watching this stuff, Maze, you got to be able to parse this out as it's happening.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You know what I'm saying?
Thanks for the advice.
They're going to throw random shit at you throughout the episode. And you got to be able to tell, okay, is this real? Is this bullshit? Is this fun for Sam Levinson? Okay, let's keep going.
Yeah, I really, with this whole play, I really enjoyed watching everyone's reaction to seeing themselves up there. Mm-hmm. But mostly, I really enjoyed how Rue seemed so proud of Lexi. Like, you know, some people would be like, oh, you know, she's showing me in a certain light. But in a way, it's just like, well, that's her truth. And that's her perspective of us and me.
Right. And it's like, that's my best friend. You know what I'm saying? And that's what the vibe was. Like, I love you. I'm down for whatever you got going. You know what I'm saying? You're obviously talented. I want to see you shine. You know, it was all of that vibe. You know, she was happy that her friend was doing her thing and that she included her in her thing, you know, and told a appropriate version of, you know, what happened in their lives. Like, I'm sure she was genuinely touched.
She didn't demonize her, try to make her look like some bad person because she was doing drugs.
No.
You know, she kind of gave it context. Well, this is why. But this doesn't make her a bad person. This is still my friend.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was looking at Rue and she's sitting with two empty chairs beside her, two empty seats. So I'm thinking like her mom and Gia was like, no, girl, we're not going to see. We're not going. But I thought that would have been so dope if Leslie was there with Sue.
Right. Yeah, that would have been tight. But maybe, you know, she just wasn't in the mood for all that. You know,
maybe she's out with Ali, you know?
I hope so.
You know, I really hope so.
But we kind of got lost track on the Fez thing because that's what I'm most worried about. As all of this stuff is taking place, you know, I'm happy for Lexi. You know, I'm happy, you know, the Rue's not on drugs at the current second, you know, like, but I'm looking at Fez like, you got your buster ass homeboy who's named Custer.
Custer.
And Faye should have way more allegiance to you at this point. She's living with you. She seems like she has a bit of a conscience, but she won't act on it. She seems like she's not as high as she used to be also, by the way.
Right.
And yeah, we got Ashtray, who's our little baby savior of the show.
Mm-hmm. Spidey senses. He got the Spidey senses. Although it was his, you know, his actions that made it hot over at the house.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like he was justified in everything that he's done. When they killed Mouse, good. He's a terrible person. He was going to kill you or put you in a twist at some point. This relationship was not going to see a positive end for one of the parties. So better him than me. You know what I'm saying? And I like that Ash could see like life through that prism because that's also the world they very much live in and they have to survive in. So yeah, it's kind of weird also to see like Fez is like kind of tripping a little bit. Like, he should be way more aware of what's going on around him, you know? And
he's love drunk, Jerry. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And so he's so hype off the show. He got his nice little roses, you know, that was like, look great. I was excited. Like, okay, he's got it all together. But what is his boy doing? Are the police on the phone? Because at first I thought he was just like going to be recording, but it seems like from the sneak preview to next episode, spoiler alert, that Fez is somehow arrested or, you know, slammed down by the police. He obviously doesn't make it to the play, but how, you know, because he put his phone down. So what do you guys think that meant?
He was recording the conversation. That's the only thing I could really get from it. You know, there's no need to go in with all the wires and shit.
Right.
You can literally just put your phone down, face down, and no one knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So we got Ashtray sitting there like, something's up. And, you know, and Faye is not making it any better by like creeping and like peeking around every corner, every chance she gets. But, you know, when Fez calls her in, you know, to ask about the Ty situation, you know, we can tell like she really think Fez is a cool ass guy and that they've, you know, they have some sort of bond. But I really hope that she can come to her senses to, you know, at least give him a heads up before he walks out. But maybe he doesn't get a chance to even walk out before everything comes in. So
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not looking at Faye to be like the savior of the situation, because at this moment, it seems like it's just too late.
Yeah, it seems like she just cowers out, because in the preview, he's knocking on the door and she's in the room, or he's, you know, somewhere. Yeah, in the
bathroom or something.
Yeah, he's screaming her name. So, yeah, it doesn't seem like things turn out great, but hopefully, I don't know, he's not in jail all next season. And Lexi's visiting him in jail.
No, they can't do that. They won't do that. They won't put Rue in rehab. They won't put Fez in jail. That's not the way that the show works. There's going to be some drama, and I'll bet you Custer end up dead. That'd be my guess.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping, honestly. Like, you know, snitches get stitches, and sometimes they get thrown in ditches. So
I got to say, though, Faye's lips are so distracting, dude. That's like half her goddamn face.
No, that's all me and my girl were talking about through the whole scene. We're like,
enormous.
How is it that somebody walks around like this every day? Like, she's perfect for the role, but it's just kind of crazy. There's a whole culture of people that look like that, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So with this whole Fez and Ashtray situation, Maze, you say if something happens to Fez, like
I'm done. I'm out.
Why? Why?
He's my guy.
He's a drug dealer.
But he's the drug dealer with the heart of gold. Oh, yeah, it wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
All right. He was born into this shit. All right. His parents abandoned him. His grandma took him in. This is just the only life he knows. He just wants to go on a really very tame date with his love interest and hold hands while he smokes weed and she looks at him. And they watch Stand By Me. That's all he's trying to do, all right?
Yeah, I get it. But, you know, we just talk about accountability, and, like, no one has really faced any true consequences in this show. So it looks like it's gonna start with him. And then, you know, we go to Jules in her bedroom trying to destroy this fucking disc.
Girl, Just snap it in half.
Exactly. I'm like, she's really, like, 17. She doesn't know what to do with this disc. Oh, speaking of... So we have a scene where we get all of the doubles, you know, as cheerleaders, and they do a performance to Tweet's song, Oops, Oh My, song that came out in 2002, where these kids were probably not born or just born when this song was hot.
Yeah. another one of my specialties. Like, they always throw one of those in every episode. You know, I'm glad you called it out this time and not me, but I had it in my notes, like, Tweet, Oops, like, come on, that was popping when I was young. Like, that's...
It was hot.
I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs.
So did you guys do theater in school?
I did not.
So when you were a part of a production, did administrators come in to see what it looked like first to give you kind of like an approval?
No, but there'd be some sort of teacher, like a theater professor or director, essentially, that would be doing that. So it's not like there's no adults in the room.
Because I'm just looking at all of the scenes in this play where we have a very sexualized cheerleading scene. And then we get the completely over-the-top gym gay scene.
We were holding out until the final segment to talk about this sequence. And Bethany, Jason, you both know me, all right? There is nothing in this world that I love more than an uber homoerotic workout dance-a-thon, okay? I love it. It was great.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on?
I need a hero.
Okay. Oh. Before I watch the episode, there's a lot of, you know, Twitter reactions, and everybody's like, oh, Lexi finished the job that Fezco started. She ethered Nate. He's done. What? No, he's a future serial killer. You're squirting lighter fluid on this fire.
Yeah.
This didn't finish him at all. This dude has committed real crimes.
Yeah.
Why are we saying that basically calling him gay is finishing this man?
Because it is a huge insecurity of his. Because this is a real life insecurity of his. He's not open about this. He wants to bury his father's, you know, history, and he's not open about his feelings with Jewel. So this is like, wait, what do you mean? I'm not gay. It's kind of like really playing with his emotions. I really enjoyed watching that asshole squirm in his seats and how everyone's turning around and looking, and the makeup on the scar on Ethan's head. Perfect. It's like, no, you know exactly who we're talking about.
Yeah. I think it wasn't an ether. Like, I feel you, Maze, because it's like Nate Jacobs is going to continue to torment people and do all kind of, you know, fucked up shit as long as he's at Euphoria High. But it was a great response on her part. And like, basically, she shined a light on him. I can just imagine, you know, everybody saw him leave at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a gossip school moment, you know, like, who knows, you know? And that's like kind of the best way she can kind of tell her sister what she's already been feeling, right?
Yeah.
And like, because she don't fuck with him, like, give him a piece of her mind. Like, I know what, you know, what you up to and all the bullshit you be on. So I think that was dope for Lexi to use her art to express her feelings to everybody. And that was kind of the culmination of it.
And Nate was clearly affected. He gets up, he walks out, and he takes it out on Cassie, of all people. It's like, oh, you knew she was... It's like, I didn't know shit.
She had moved in, by the way. He said, get your stuff.
Pack your stuff and get out. Get out of my damn house.
Yeah.
The one other thing that just didn't totally sit well with me on this was, we've talked in the past, especially with that conversation between Jewel and Elliot, about like sexuality is a spectrum and how progressive the sexual politics of this show are generally. Mm-hmm. This seemed very reductive and kind of antiquated. Just calling the macho sports guy gay and saying that when they're working out, they're really jerking each other off. He's not gay. He's struggling with his sexuality, but he's not out here fucking dudes. Like, he's clearly in love with Jewel and he's infatuated with her, and she's trans. And so that's a very thorny landscape. But
this is, again, this is Lexi's point of view here. You know, maybe she's not as progressive as everyone else is.
Right. She's one of those fake libs.
Okay. So when I say that it's tone deaf, you're saying that Lexi's tone deaf. All right.
Lexi's tone deaf. It's her. It's her.
She's misogynistic.
Basically. Yeah. Because like, if someone who really cares about, you know, people and their own experiences with their own sexuality, you would never out them like that. You would never embarrass them. You would never treat someone in that way. But it's like, but it's Nate, you know? Right. You know, and the guy that she's, you know, she has feelings for, bust him over the head with a bottle. Like, you know, I'm sure she's been, you know, made aware, like, of the disc, perhaps, and the relationship with, you know, how he tormented Jules and Rue. So it's kind of like, let me get you back in a way that humiliates you as much as possible.
Yeah.
I fucks with it.
Yeah, I was
I fucks with it, but I don't, because you don't out anyone like that. But I see that she's like still riding for her people at the same time, trying to wake her sister up. Like, the guy that you're in love with is a fucking nut.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I really fucked with it for, was like, if you got to do some kind of like silly shit to get somebody's attention, especially like your sister, then why not? And it worked in the context of her play. Like, everybody liked it, you know? So I think the ends justify the means in this case.
Yeah. The giant punching bag, heavy bag coming down from the sky right next to the two medicine balls to form a giant silhouetted phallus. Yes, everybody.
The squirt bottles.
The confetti jizz, all of it. Yes, it had people calling Lexi a genius.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, is she a choreographer too? Seems like she's just a writer. And she says her notes were probably, Nate does some gay shit, and then somebody else took care of that.
Somebody else drew it up. The choreography in this play was excellent. The blocking, obviously we talked about the set design. Shout out to the real and the fake people who made that happen.
No, I loved in the featurette the choreographer talking about his inspiration, and Sam was basically like, yeah, we kind of just let him run with this one. And we were pleased with what he came up with. Like I said, I loved it as a standalone work of art. I didn't really Yeah. It wasn't a finishing move, man.
So please. So your whole problem with this episode was just it. You didn't understand where we were, like the transitions between, you know, someone's thoughts, real life, and the play.
To a degree, yes. I thought it was overly complicated, is how I would put it. I am totally fine with you doing a ridiculous high school play. That's fine. I'm all for it. Give it to me. But let me see the play being the play, right? Let the characters who are supposed to be playing, who are standing in for our characters, let them do the work. Don't bring in the real actors to do the scenes. Like, and keep us in the theater. Make us have the reactions that the audience is having, as opposed to like trying to put us in their heads and jumping all over the place in time. I just felt like it was too much.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting also how they did the Rue and Jade switches throughout. Because Lexi's Lexi the whole time.
Right.
And sometimes she's with Rue,
so sometimes she's with Jade. I wanted to say that. So Lexi's character is supposed to be Grace. Now, when she's doing that whole walkthrough, you know, as her future, like, hot self, someone was like, oh, I should have banged Lexi Howard. It was like, wait, I thought her name was Grace.
That's a great point. That's a great, great point. Yeah, that might be the best point for Maze's point.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying that I don't disagree with you. I just really loved being able to like think and not have everything just spelled out for me. I had to really just sit back and be like, oh, what are they trying to do here?
Like Jason, you said this was one of your favorite episodes, maybe your favorite episode.
Yeah.
Right? Like I really, really enjoyed the Rue standalone two episodes ago.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that I enjoyed it is because it's the most linear and like,
yeah, it makes sense.
Like, you know, cinematic storytelling that we've had in an episode of Euphoria. This was the complete other side of that.
Yeah, 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 exactly. But I love that. I'm more of like an avant-garde filmmaker. Like, this is like the French New Wave, you know, this is like,
oh, mais oui.
Yeah, this, you know,
Euphoria.
This is exactly. And so it does, you know, it's like Jules and Jim. It doesn't all have to make sense. There's all these random cuts and jumps in the story and what, you know, like you're just being thrown around and that's fun.
Fuck the rule book.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
we're just
going to
put on a show. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I will say this. When I finished Euphoria season one, I went online and found the pilot episode. And in the pilot, Nate is killed.
Wow.
Yeah. First episode. So he dies. And then I guess it starts off. I can't remember. I think it starts off with his memorial at the football stadium. It's kind of like, oh, it's sad what happened to Nate, but fuck him. And then they go into this whole story about how he was this huge terrorist. Mm. So it's just so funny just to see how much the show has changed from inception to what we see now, that he was, I mean, you guys watched This Is Us, right?
No,
I don't. I have not.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna just save that analogy for another time. Okay.
This is not us.
I don't
want to
spoil it.
Yeah, this ain't us.
I do not want to spoil it. It is incredible how they wrote it, and it's kind of similar to Euphoria, because we kind of jump in time here and there, but yeah, it's just really interesting to see how everything is playing out. How, of course, you have to keep Nate on because he's such a menace on this show,
and he's hot.
But Maze, the other reason why I love this episode is that it incorporated different moods. It's jumping around, but I got suspense with the Fez story. I got the, you know, the joy of the theater and all of that. You know, I got the
They were talking about how it was kind of sitcom-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you had
comedy, you had the sad moments when we revisit, you know, Cassie and Lexi's dad and how they're like dancing together you know, Ethan, who's playing every fucking body. MVP. And I loved it.
Oh, MVP.
Give him the Tony, give him the Tony. All of that. The Emmy, everything, you know.
You get a little bit of a horror movie with Cassie fogging up the glass outside the theater.
Right, exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
No, we got it all. And so sometimes you need a good gumbo. And that's what I felt like this episode was. You know, they gave us the whole thing and the kitchen sink.
Gumbo. Where would you make gumbo?
I guess you'd do it in Rue's kitchen.
And unless y'all have anything else you want to, any other herbs and spices you want to add to the pot?
No, to be continued.
Do it for us this week on Rue's Kitchen. For Bethany Anderson, Jason Madison, I'm Anthony Mays. We'll see you for the season finale of Euphoria.
Yeah.
I don't want it to end.